Bonanza. You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Mason Waswas.
We got an interview for you this week. We got some listener feedback that we recorded when we still knew how to do the recorder.
Yep.
And it's all going to be great. Just saying we love you. And here's some of a show. We're out here in beautiful Oakland, California, talking to artist, arts educator, director, Desiree Holman. Is there any other
entrepreneur, matriarch? I think those fitting.
I just wanted to ask what you're, I mean, I guess what you're working on now, because I know what you've been working on recently, and I don't know if you're still working on the Safant sort of series or if you have launched off into a new project idea or...
Yeah. Well, the answer is both.
Cool.
Yeah. So I'm continuing to work on Safant and should have a big announcement coming soon about that project. That's exciting. So it will be continuing and evolving, which is actually super exciting for me, because I've kind of come to this place in my practice where instead of seeing these projects as chapters where I kind of turn the page and I'm on to the next chapter, they're sort of continue to be open doors and more like spokes in a wheel, and they just keep moving and evolving, which is pretty refreshing and exciting. It's taken me to a lot of new places, including recently doing a very large-scale live cinema event at the Red Rocks in Colorado.
We would love to know more about, like, it's your Safant project. The broader project is about alien abduction.
Well, I wouldn't say that exactly, but it is a topic I'm interested in, and I think we should spend some time talking about alien abduction, actually. So this is some research that went into the project.
Well, I just remember I saw you speak at the Battery.
Yeah.
And you were talking about all these different groups that have had a extraterrestrial experience, like the Raelians.
Oh, yeah.
Could you tell us about the Raelians?
Yeah. The Raelians are fascinating. So the Raelians are a very progressive group that, and they're a new religion led by a Frenchman named Rael. And I believe that it was started in the 50s after he was purportedly abducted and brought onto a mothership. And he was a race car driver. I don't know, it doesn't connect, it's not important for the narrative, but I just want you to know that he was a race car driver.
It makes sense.
Well, right, he was a risky guy, you know? Yeah. He's willing to live on the edge, I guess, you know? So he's definitely embracing some risky concepts. He was abducted, he learned all this secret, sacred knowledge in his abduction, and then started a religion. And called Raelianism. They're a very socially progressive group, and they have a little bit of a scandalous history because they believe that any media is good media. So they had, or at least in the past they did, they had made claims of cloning Dolly the sheep, and... but by a member who was a scientist, and making the first cloned animal, which turned out to not be true. Very, very, very disappointing. But anyways, they're all for genetically modified foods. They're all for cloning. They're all for free love. They've put a lot of energy into backing gay marriage. They put a lot of energy into backing polyamory. And they also put a lot of energy into opening a theme park in Canada, where you could go on to a remade version of the mothership, reconstructed from Rael's memory, which is awesome. I think it.
I want to go there.
Yeah, it's closed now. I would have already gone. It was called UFO Land. So okay, but they're the really thing that fascinates me most, actually, because just to cycle it back to my work for a moment, I'm really interested in kind of culturally shared fantasies or phantasms. And how, whether it's mainstream or cultural niches or like subcultures, how we have work out issues of equality. And in these kind of fantasy scapes or hopes or aspirations, or how we may work out fears around equality. So that's really why I was drawn to the Raelians. And so they have this amazing narrative where if you sort of accept the Elohim, which are the extraterrestrials that abducted Rael, as the creators, but I could be wrong here, but you can have your DNA downloaded onto the mothership. And then you don't need to worry about the eventual destruction of Mother Earth. And in their viewpoint, that's where we're going, because you can be reincarnated on the mothership in whatever form you like. And so this is the exciting part. So how they kind of stitch up inequality around class and race and other ways that we have an equal access to resources and opportunity, because in this afterlife narrative, the subservient class are all robots. And so all the reincarnated people are equal. And you can come back however you like. Yeah, this is a pretty cool fantasy.
How do you accept the Elohim? Is that right?
That's a good question.
Do you just do it like a Jesus thing where you just are like, I accept you?
Oh, I thought you were asking me personally.
Oh, do you? Oh, yeah, no, I want to get on. I mean,
okay. I don't know the answer to that, how to be a Raelian, how you would accept the Elohim.
I mean, I'm sure there's people itching to tell me, like, yes. Just got to find one, and I'm sure they'll suck me right in.
Yeah. Oh, I want to be there. can I get in on this?
And there were also other groups that you researched, too, I remember. The Indigo Children. Is that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love the Indigos. They are, well, it's a highly debated, I mean, within certain circles, concept. You know, we just acknowledge on the outset this couldn't be farther from academia. it's kind of like on, I think, in the realm of like conspiracy theory. Not to be pejorative, you know. I mean, I'm just saying that's not meant to be pejorative. The original woman who wrote about Indigo Children, her idea was that there are these children being born starting after in the 1950s, and there are very few of them. And then after the 1989 Harmonic Convergence Meditation for World Peace, more and more were being born. Basically, they're thought to be these children whose auras glow indigo. They are thought to be the next phase of humanity. People come up with their own narratives. So you can just self-identify as indigo. You could, Kate, for all I know, you're about to tell us you're an indigo. And you
never had my aura read. So,
well, I think some indigos, they just know. Like, they recognize that their DNA has been altered by extraterrestrials and that they're different than other people. The idea is they tend to have or think of themselves as having an advanced intelligence, advanced emotional capacities. Not that there's a ton of empirical research on this group, but there is some. And in the 90s, when there was data that I was able to access that had been collected on them, a lot of these kids who self-identified or their parents identified them as indigos were ADHD. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of, this was that time followed Columbine, the shooting at Columbine. And there was other disturbances in American high schools and kids like acting out. And there was kind of this general idea, this loss of innocence that was happening in the media. So theory that one person has put forward that being an indigo was a way to kind of reclaim a childhood. So it's not that my kid is bad and is violent or can't or isn't succeeding in a traditional educational environment. It's that they're an indigo. They're special and they have like special needs and their ability outstrips other regulars. I've kind of taken the indigo and in the Sofont project sort of taken the indigo step identity farther and kind of grabbed onto this cultural phantasm, if you will. And it's not original. It's definitely not my idea. I saw seeds of this, but I also haven't really seen anyone write about this. There are a lot of kids who are mixed race or who are androgynous, who are also more now, who are calling themselves indigos. Yeah. So I love the indigos. And that's a fantasy I want to believe in. Like that... that this identity or this space, this kind of interstitial identities could be the new phase of humanity or this kind of like special group of chosen people.
So for your, for at least for Sofont, you had a number of characters. So they're all based off of sort of research you've done. So where the characters are exist in some way out in the world, but then you're sort of modifying them.
There's four character types, but I think it's probably worth it to explore three of the four, because the fourth is this kind of character type that functions mostly in the performance as this intermediary between the audience and the performers, and they're called guides. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the indigo children. The other two types, they have different relationships to reality. And they have different relationships to being a kind of pastiche of these pre-existing identities or belief systems that are out in the world. And so I don't think someone who's out in the world as either an ecstatic dancer, that's one of the character types, or let's say a transhumanist would necessarily be like, that's me when they see the time travelers, which is the other character type. So just to review, the three types of characters are the time travelers. They tend to be over 65 years old. And then the ecstatic dancers, they tend to be adults that are under 50. And then the indigo children, primarily, although not exclusively, but primarily prepubescent children that are over six. So the time traveler is definitely the character that is the largest kind of pastiche or cultural mashup. So they're inspired by anything that's in the realm of like techno-spirituality. So that could be transhumanism, that could be Scientologists, that could be Raelians. I think what is interesting about them is, other than their age, is that they wear these things called psionics helmets that are these handmade helmets that are pretty goofy, but they actually, many of them actually operate with a microcontroller and like do something. Mm-hmm. So they may look, they have like, look like they have something like an antenna scrubbing for a signal or lights that like flash out in a visual translation of Morse code and pulse out the word Sofont or something like that. But their psionics refers to psychic abilities. So like telekinesis or whatever, mind reading. And those were very much inspired by the tinfoil hats, and which right, classically have like a dual function. You're either like blocking mind reading or you're transmitting signals. So let's say it's like 85% tinfoil hat and like 15% Google Glass, something like that. Yeah. So last final character is the Ecstatic Dancer, and they're really inspired by some kind of hometown heroes in Berkeley. I did a little conscious dancing here, which was, I think I did it sort of in the participant observation mode, but it was also pretty fun and goofy and all these things mixed up. But I was interested in them because they combine a highly spiritualized new age rhetoric with dance floor. So when they enter the dance floor, it's considered a sacred space. Mm-hmm. And they will dance with directed intentionality. And I like some of the ideas that they embody. It's not that I like them, it's that I'm interested. I think it's fascinating. And a theme for me that I'm interested in is this kind of the political nature of a lot of New Age identity, but how it kind of comes into friction with direct political action, or this idea of like, mental focus can affect change in the world. I just find it an interesting area to look at and think about. Dyed in the wool New Agers generally, I can't like speak for everyone, but they're generally pretty skeptical of the academy or science, mm-hmm. or can be. Yeah. They're very, and I love that. They're like deeply anti-establishment. And there's this whole, there's, you know, obviously a really interesting history here in the Bay Area, where like in the 60s countercultural movement, all of these people here were very anti-materialist, were very anti-capitalist, and had like a Buddhist ideology influencing their lifestyles and their belief systems. And that's really radically changed through like S seminars and or Est seminars and stuff like that, and the kind of Marin hot tubber scene where they're like radical positive thinkers. You see a lot that are like pretty entitled to their lifestyle, which I'm trying to say this all neutrally because this really isn't about judging. It's more about like noticing how shifts in attitude happens and kind of thinking about the meaning behind these attitudes. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about their, you know, just getting from one project to the next, like what's happening where you've, or do you feel, I mean, I don't know, I guess I'm just trying to understand how you go from the Savant, which is, I mean, incredibly, it really, it's sort of own world to some degree. And there's a lot of elements that you're looking into that are kind of all around this one sort of universe. I guess I'm just thinking about how you go from one project to the next, or how, what that looks like for you.
Yeah. All the projects are, I mean, the kind of, the impulse between all the projects, behind all the projects, is really similar. And sort of always kind of mining these ideas of looking for equality in these kind of fantasies, or kind of what's revealed in these fantasies or phantasms. Because let's also want to acknowledge that some things that I'm addressing as phantasms are reality for people. And that's basically in the kind of Freudian framework, I'm interested in creating these scenarios where people are kind of working through something and looking at the ashes of that for meaning, and also getting lost in play and interested in kind of moving these narratives into the land of fiction and fantasy, because I think what's powerful about fiction or fantasy is that it's a safe place, mm-hmm. to look at really complicated issues. And I also can't, I mean, I think I need to acknowledge that the gesture of getting casting and getting people together in what I think of as a liminoid space, where there's kind of a reset and I'm creating an experience for people, is really powerful. And I think is a big part of why I do what I do. Intellectually, to get into like kind of linking projects and how one bridges to the next, I think the best way to explain that is really to just give you a couple examples. So, So Font, for me, grew directly out of a project almost as a bookend that I had done in 2007 called Troglodyte, where people dressed up as apes. And I looked at kind of looking at semen and projections like reciprocal altruism, violence, sex, animism, I mean, these are the things that interested me in human culture, and we're doing it through play and people dressing up and getting to do these things, like dress up as ape and then like hump on each other, even though you don't really know that person, or like you get to hit the other person, like these sort of like play things that were only okay because we were like in this space of play. And obviously there's lots of examples in culture where there's lots of human projection onto apes, and our DNA is really, really similar. So, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I started to, on the other side, way back then, get interested in any places in philosophy where we might see the extraterrestrial and a kind of projection into the extraterrestrial. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like, you know, part of our narrative, or for most of us, is that we are at least aware of the idea of evolution. And so you can see in popular culture that we have this idea that apes are somehow the like past humanity, and extraterrestrials sometimes occupy the space of like future humanity. So, I mean, it really skipped ahead like 2007 to 2012, but all those years I was thinking about that and kind of mining material, some of it scholarly material, but other times it was in popular culture.
Do you get a lot of people like giving you things and recommending things for you to do projects about? Like acupuncture?
A little bit. Nothing comes to mind, but I would like more, please.
People are like, "Dear Desiree Holman, I've been thinking about your practice. I really think you should do a project about
mole people."
But I did get an email a long time ago with someone who had diagnosed me, it seems, as being schizophrenic. Whoa. And yeah, and like sent me like a PDF handbook. Yeah, that was interesting.
Wow.
Yeah,
you would know by now.
Yeah, I'm not schizophrenic, and you know, for better or worse, but yeah, no diagnosis to date.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like listeners to know?
Well, we want to know where Congratulations Pine Tree comes from. What's that? What's the history there?
Maysoon and I have differing opinions on how we got the name.
I'm right, though.
I think that Maysoon didn't want to use her real name on the podcast because she thought it was going to hurt her reputation. And so she was going to have...
It might have, for all I know.
And we were standing outside of the Mills Museum talking about that, and there was a tree there. And so one of us was like, "Oh, well, you could just be called Pine Tree." Except I think I wanted to call you Jalapeno Jones.
And I was probably like, "Hell no."
And then later on, also at Mills, it was graduation time. And the headline on the campanile, the Mills College newspaper, said, "Congratulations." And one of us was like, "Congratulations, Pine Tree." And we just liked the ring of it. That's my theory on how we got the name.
I think you're right in that I wasn't sure if I wanted to use my real name when we started, because I was like, I don't know what is this going to end up being? Am I just going to be swearing and talking shit about everyone? Like, what's going to happen here? So I felt nervous about just what we were doing and my role as like a professional sort of arts administrator in the Bay Area and how that's going to be implicated in what we're talking about, which we've managed now. I'm fine to be identified as myself. So maybe Pine Tree came from that, but the congratulations definitely came from, you like how I say that? I was on Facebook and reading all these different, read this article about how there was an algorithm on Facebook that highlighted any posts that use certain words like congratulations or, oh, look, you had a baby or a wedding. These different words they would sort of highlight. So
happy birthday.
You would see those more in your feed.
Yeah.
And so it also coincided with whatever, the end of the school year and graduation. So congratulations. And I thought I just was like, at Mills campus where there's a million pine trees, like, congratulations, Pine Tree.
And you two met at Mills.
Yeah.
Maysoon was my boss.
Yeah. Oh,
that's right.
At the Mills Museum.
Okay.
I think I always like to think that there's like a pine tree that you go to, like when you need to congratulate someone, like everybody meets around this tree.
Oh,
and then like we're all going to congratulate you and be here with this whatever important landmark.
Pine cone.
Yep. And whoever gets bonked is the most congratulated.
Pine cones.
What's that?
We should start gifting people little pine cones.
Yeah, when we interview them, give them a golden pine cone.
Yes.
Love it.
Well, anyhow, Desiree Holman, thank you so much for chatting with us today. And as always, congratulations.
Thank you.
And goodbye. Real quick, this is another jam-packed episode here. We got a little bit of listener feedback. Okay, from an anonymous listener, 2.5-parter, they say. When was the last time art made you feel super embarrassed?
Oh,
isn't that
what
great?
A good question.
I feel like that's easy to answer as an artist because I've done plenty of things that made me feel embarrassed.
Embarrassed. I can't. I'm just trying to, like, you know, I've felt overjoyed and crying or.
Oh, my God. I know exactly mine.
Or I've felt like this is stupid and I walk out. But embarrassed. That's a hard one. Where you're like embarrassed for yourself or embarrassed for the artist or just.
Or embarrassed to be like watching like somebody's dick get nailed to a board standing next to like, you know, someone like your mom.
Yeah. Well, I guess I feel like
mom, can we go to this art show? And then it's nothing but like butt plugs and testicles getting sewn together.
Right. Ooh. That sounds pretty painful.
I'm thinking of Robert Flanagan.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I think the most embarrassing art thing I've ever had that now looking back, I'm mortified was when I made that sculpture of Andrea Fraser and then emailed her about it. Because I just, that was crossing the line and then she stopped emailing me.
Oh, she probably maybe
and rightly so.
Maybe she was like, wow, this is a little bit creepy.
And I mean, her work can be kind of creepy and weird too, but I think that was just not the way to form a good professional relationship.
Yeah. That's so really funny. I love
it's
it.
It's mortifying enough that I've never mentioned it before on the podcast. The next segment of this listener feedback question is, what's the deal with art-related merchandise? What would your congratulations pine tree tote bag look like? I'm talking full details / conceptual underpinning / rendering in... rendering in the underworld.
Art world merchandise. People gotta make money, man.
I kind of feel like it's, you know, I feel less conflicted about that kind of stuff, like selling tote bags and shit like that,
yeah,
than selling the actual $30,000 painting.
Right.
Because at least, like, I mean, a lot of it's still kind of like stuff that like middle or upper middle class people can afford, like, you know, like shit at museum stores.
Swag.
Is really expensive.
You know? You get a tote bag for like $40. Yeah.
But you could go on eBay and grab like a Starry Night tote bag for next to nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm fine with it. I don't think it like cheapens. I don't give a fuck. I don't think it cheapens the work. Actually, this was funny. Andrea Fraser talks about in one of her essays about, like, you know, Walter Benjamin, the work of art in the age of mechanical reproduction,
mm-hmm.
where he talks about how, like, the reproducibility, like, an artwork being reproduced takes away its aura.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it does, and Andrea Fraser said this too in an essay, I think it gives it more of an aura, because then after you've seen it a million times and you go see the real thing, it's like got more to it because you like it has this legend around it.
It could either be that or it's like hyped up and it doesn't. You know?
You think that?
It could go either.
You remember you saw the David.
It could
and you
go either way.
It's penis.
I didn't touch his penis. I didn't actually touch.
But like
David.
You've seen famous works of art. Like I think maybe
I just think art in person is so different than on, you know.
Yeah, but
a
like
cheap like poster print.
I mean,
or
compared
in a book,
to
even.
Like if you go to. Wherever the Uffizi or wherever some fucking place with lots of famous shit in it.
The Uffizi is a good one.
Yeah, like you.
I cried.
Boom.
I did actually cry.
why didn't you tell us that in the episode where we were talking about crying about works of art?
Because I didn't remember. Because I can't fucking recall things like whenever you ask, like whenever you're like, right now, what are you embarrassed about?
Uh-huh.
I can't do it.
Well, anyhow. So, yeah, there you go. Well, what do you remember what work it was exactly that you cried at? Or just the overall whole experience?
No, no, not the overall. It might have been like, no, it wasn't Giotto. It was like, you know, the
one
old,
of those oldies.
Like, oldies.
Yeah. With like, but was it something that you had seen before?
I think it was just because I was in college and was like in the midst of studying like the Renaissance and all of those painters.
Yeah, see?
And was just like so floored and overwhelmed to be like in their presence.
Exactly.
That I was just like literally crying.
Yeah.
And like talking to the guards in like the broken Italian, because I was like, how can you sit here amongst us? Are you like overwhelmed all the time? I was like totally going off.
Yeah.
I was being a very cute nerd.
Don't give a shit.
No, no, they were very excited.
Oh, that's cute.
I was also studying Italian, so I could speak. I could actually have a little bit of a conversation, but yeah. I was just like super overwhelmed and so happy to be there.
But do you think you would have been as happy if you had never seen it all before and only had heard about it?
Possibly. I mean, the work is pretty stunning.
I saw The Thinker.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like one of the little maquettes that Rodin made when he was working on making the big one.
Yeah.
It was in like Washington, D.C. That's the only thing I remember seeing on that trip. And I must have seen hundreds of works of art.
Yeah.
But that was the only one that I knew from pictures and being
famous.
Well,
so there's also that kind of, yeah, it's famous.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's famous because there's so many reproductions of
it. Right. So it's like that Looney Tunes adoration, you know.
It's in Looney Tunes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like... And I think it, so in my mind, it had more aura.
I don't think it loses out because it gets reprinted a million times.
So long story short.
But I do think you should try to go see the real thing if you can.
Yeah.
People.
But that's also the glory of like, I don't know. It doesn't have to be tote bags. It can just be like pictures on the internet or whatever. But that like not everybody can go,
mm-hmm.
you know.
No, no, of course.
Yeah. So anyhow,
but there are museums in many, many cities and towns.
True that.
That can give you a similar
experience.
But they
experience. Don't all have the fucking Thinker and the
but
fucking.
But it doesn't take Uffizi just shit. It's not only the Thinker and Uffizi that can make you feel that.
Got to get that high, get that art high.
But it could be from a Kate Rhodes.
Yeah. Anyhow. So merchandising may soon. Last word on merchandising.
Got to make some money.
Yeah, and I don't mind. I like that I can afford to have something.
I like having tote bags from all my favorite arts organizations and artists local. Yeah. I'm like, hey, man, I love these people. I'm supporting them. It's cool.
Yeah. You can, if you can't afford to get their 50,000 one. And I like tote
bags, people. I need to fill them up with everything.
Yeah. I feel like at a different time, we could have a different perspective on this. But at this moment, we feel positive about it. So the other question, the half question, was what would our tote bag look like? What would it look like? It would be great. It would have our faces on it.
I
microphones
really like
entwined like a, it would be our faces like a skull and crossbones, but the crossbones are microphones.
Yeah.
And then wings on the side.
Ooh, wings.
And all and gold on purple.
Wings?
I don't know. Anyhow, that's what it would look like.
Gold on purple? Wow.
Z-Space has a show coming out that's by this theater troupe from, like, Texas or something. They're called the Rude Mechs, and that's Mechs, like, M-E-C-H-S. And they have a play called The Method Gun that I'm super excited about, and it's showing on Thursday, Friday, and I think Saturday at Z-Space.
What's it about? Got anything?
It is about... It's, like, a really... deconstructed like meta version of Streetcar Named Desire.
Oh, wow.
But it's about this theater teacher who is teaching this troupe or like directing this troupe in a production of Streetcar Named Desire, but you never see that person.
Got it. Cool.
I saw it at the Time Based Art Festival back when I lived in Portland, and it was like one of my favorite things I've ever seen.
Is it the same group?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Cool. I kind of want to go now.
Totally.
I feel like it's rare that you want to see something you saw years ago again because it was so good, or that you even have the opportunity to do that, you know?
Absolutely.
All right.
Hope that was a little morsel for the ears.
And if it wasn't, go ahead and take the survey and tell us what you want to hear. From the bridge to the other bridge to the island in between.
This has been Congratulations Pine Tree. Be sure to give us a call, 419-351-6606. You can email us congratulationspinetree@gmail.com and all the other ones that you can find through psychic power.